This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 120, recorded on June 6th, 2013. Here on Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. We've had great weather today. Just made me want to stay outside all day. And of course, we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at theAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, and guys, thanks for sending in some emails this week. It was a dynamite week. Really made me feel good about the show, so I appreciate any good comments you send in. Bad ones are okay, too. If we've got some issues you want us to work on, send those in. You can contact me. Just send us a podcast at theAverageGuy.tv, or you can find me on Twitter, just at Jay Collison, or follow the show schedule Twitter account at TheAverageGuy.tv. You can also join us for live chat. I've said this a couple times in the pre-show, and you can always join us early on the pre-show. We do the live show 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out at theAverageGuy.tv live. But you can find the chat window to the right of the live stream window or right above the YouTube player over at theAverageGuy.tv/live. Love to have you join us out there, and great conversation going on during the show. All right, a couple guys, our regular guests, our regular hosts are out. Christian is in his first week of his internship at NASA and texted me earlier and said he couldn't make it. Andrew was having trouble tracking down some help at the house so that the kids wouldn't interrupt during the show, but I've got two guys that have been on the podcast before and are VM experts in every sense of the term, so we're going to talk virtualization tonight. All the way to my left, Jay Moore. Jay, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Yeah, you're putting on a good face, my friend. We all know you're struggling a little bit, so thanks for taking one for the team and coming out tonight. I appreciate it.
That'd be good.
And then all the way to the right, and from JPEG to Raw and the JPEG to Raw podcast, and a guy that's been doing these shows a lot with me, Mike Howard. Mike, how are you?
I am great. I am just coming off of cruise mode, so I still got the cruise attire on, and doing good. I'll correct you on one thing. I don't know how much of a VM expert I am, but I will.
Well,
I have a few comments.
You've done this in the home. You know, certainly virtualization is a big deal in the enterprise, and right. And a lot of organizations are going that way. This is not what we're going to talk about tonight. So if you came out here thinking we're going to talk about big enterprise virtualization, if it's the first time to the show, stay, because I think we're going to talk. We have a very interesting topic where we talk about virtualization in the home. And, you know, 5 years ago, guys, we wouldn't even have this conversation. I mean, virtualization was very specialized then and very not very many people were doing it at all. Maybe difficult to do, and the technologies weren't that great. And they've really come along a long way here in the last half decade to the point where we're all talking about running VMs in our house. And so the goal of tonight is to talk a little bit about that and to just have some conversation around it. By all means, if you're out there listening in chat tonight, just drop your questions in, and we'll get those answered. Mike, I want to start off with you. Let's just dive right in to the conversation. And you know, what was interesting to me, and I had forgotten about this, even though we've talked a lot about it in the last couple of years, is that for a while you've been using Zen Server, which is a Citrix product.
Right.
And that is not one. We always talk about VMware. In our community, Hyper-V gets a lot of attention because it's right. A Microsoft product. But I want you to kind of walk through, go back a little bit, give us the history of how you've used virtualization, how maybe you're using it now, if you are. And kind of run through the product a little bit for us.
Well, it started for me back when, you know, I hate to say bring this term up again, but with the super router. I had wanted to put both versions, both sides, what I call super routers, pfSense and Untangle. I wanted to put both of them on one machine because I was running them on two separate machines and in a crazy configuration where it was just a motherboard screwed to a piece of plywood. You know, it was a bare thing, and I wanted to put that into one box and virtualize it. And part of what I wanted to do that for was I wanted to have different versions of pfSense, more than Untangle, where I can turn them on and off real easy and try out different configurations. So my first thought was to go with, you know, ESXi, because that is really the industry leader. I mean, you can't deny that they are the leader. I've read somewhere they're you know, 70%+ of the market, Hyper-V being second, somewhere in the 20% range. But then Zen Server was down there, you know, 7 to 10%. And it is a you know, it's a light install. It's not a full OS where you're like you would with Server 2008 R2 or Server 2012, something like that. And it's pretty easy. So I went to install ESXi, and it wouldn't install on my hardware. It had problems with either the NIC cards or the motherboard. I can't remember which one it was. So I said, you know what the heck? There is a free version of Zen Server, and there are paid versions too. I think the one-step-up version from free is like $1,000 per server. So, you know, I'm not going to do that in the home. I went with the free version. The free version does not have dynamic memory. So that's probably the biggest lacking thing there for the home user. You can't use dynamic memory, and I'll talk a little bit about that here in a second. But it installed no problem at all. And I had, at the time, cheap old Netgear NICs in there. So it was not very picky on what hardware I was using. It let me install it on, you know, the CPU did allow virtualization, of course. But it let me install it on the hardware I had. And installing, you know, anything Linux or, you know, pfSense is FreeBSD. It's not even Linux. All that was super easy. It just installed really easy. And then I could even set up a template. So I install the first pfSense. I create that as a template. And now if I want to create different pfSense in the future, I just do it off that template pfSense I just did. And bam, I have another version of pfSense up and running, and I can configure it differently. So, and it will run, of course, all of the Windows operating system. It is not just Linux and stuff. It'll run all of those. And it runs them very, very easily. I never had any trouble with it. And it ran just fine. Where I ran into trouble eventually was as my internet speed got faster and faster. I think when we got up to 60 megabit connection on internet speed, I started running into trouble where I could not get that speed. And I narrowed it down to Zen Server's virtual NICs. So, you know, you have the physical NICs, but then there was communication happening between pfSense and Untangle on the virtual NIC inside of Zen Server. And that virtual NIC was having issues where it wouldn't allow the speed to go through it.
How long ago was that, Mike?
That was probably a year ago.
Okay, and you haven't been troubleshooting or been, you don't have it, do you have it running right now?
I do not have it running right now, and I'll tell you why, and this is something to keep in mind with Zen Server. So outside of that issue, I continued, I actually at that point, I think I killed Untangle and just ran pfSense, so then it was no longer a problem because it was using, it wasn't using those virtual NICs, and it ran fine. I would stop one version of pfSense, start up another one, go through all that. It was a beautiful thing, and I love Zen Server, and I had a number, I felt that my VMs, even the Windows VMs, actually ran a little bit better, and I don't have any hard proof on this, but I felt they ran a little bit better than they do under Hyper-V. Now, this is maybe it's not an apples-to-apples comparison because my Hyper-V that I'm running now is the full 2008 R2, so there is that OS overhead that you have going on there. But where I ran the problem was pfSense and Zen Server ran for, it must have been close to a year without me touching it. It just ran with no problem. And I went to go change some hardware. And when I turned it back on is when I realized that my license had ran out. Zen Server requires you to update the license every year.
So yeah, even for the free version, you have even to like, register version. Your license,
yeah.
Right?
You got to register a license. And apparently my license had ran out for a while. But it's fine, except for when you stop a VM and it won't let you restart the VM. Well, in this case, the VM was my router. So when I went to restart it, it wouldn't restart, which means now I have no internet connection. And I don't know if you remember this, but all this happened an hour before I was supposed to come on one of your shows.
Yeah, I remember.
So ago.
Yeah.
And I had to, from scratch, build a pfSense router an hour before we went live. And at that point, that's when I did not bring Zen Server back up. So that was my fault. It's not a problem with Zen Server. It's something I should have been monitoring. I should have fixed. But it is something to keep in mind with that.
What kind of hardware was it on?
It was on a 6-core AMD with 16 gig of RAM.
And no, you know, we talk a lot. Actually, there's a conversation going on in the chat room about making sure your CPU is kind of, and Jay, maybe you can say, I don't want to say certified for virtualization, but supports virtualization, right? That not all Intel chips support the virtualization that goes on. Is that across the board on all virtualization technologies, or is that strictly with Hyper-V or VMware? Or do you know how that works, Jay?
Not so much with the different virtualization platforms, but I was just reading this just now. I was talking about not all processors that have Intel VT, which is a virtualization technology, will still support actually running this kind of stuff. So it's that's a very good question. I mean, there's a whole list of even Intel Core i7s. Well, okay, so they're all mobile, but you know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
there's
And they're not specifically. My understanding is that they. You can run VMs, but you're not going to get great performance off the CPU, or they don't have that VT support or the virtualization support for the various software applications. And so if you're a home user and you're thinking about virtualization, you might want to check the serial number or the model of your processor. If it's Intel, just go to intel.com, look up that processor. Intel does a really nice job of documenting, documenting a lot of the specs around their processors. And you want to look for that virtualization support. It'll be, there's a long list of things they support, and there'll be a virtualization section. It'll just say yes or no. Does it support it or doesn't? If it doesn't support it, that doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means it's not going to run at the faster speed you're going to get if that chip does support the virtualization technology that's associated. Mike, is AMD the same way?
I was about to ask a question. I don't know if I've run into an AMD modern chip that, unless it's a mobile chip, but an AMD modern chip that does not support virtualization.
Okay, so maybe that's built in. I'm not as familiar with the AMD side of the house. I've been kind of an Intel guy for most of this. Maybe the chat room, somebody in the chat room can look that up on the AMD side. Maybe they just all natively support that out of the box. So,
you know, one of the downsides of the free version of Zen Server that I do like in Hyper-V is with the free version of Zen Server, you don't get that dynamic memory. And if you're trying to, what they call, I think, memory overcommit, if you're trying to squeeze as many VMs into one server as you can, that memory overcommit is critical. You really want that because you don't want to allocate 2 gig to every one of your VMs when they really don't need 2 gig to boot up. You know, may need it later on, but you don't want to have. If you hard allocate those, you've limited yourself. The free version of Zen Server does not allow you to do memory overcommit. Where Hyper-V, I'm not a big fan of the way Hyper-V does it, but at least it does allow you to do it.
One of the things I was talking with John Wills before the show, and of course. Windows Server 2012 R2, he is mentioning, and we're not going to talk about this tonight. That's not the intent. There's still a lot of things. We'll have to do that on a future show. But the second version, R2 of 2012, changes a lot of things around virtualization. So it'll be interesting to see what, if you were just getting, like me, I'm just kind of getting into Hyper-V. I just really started about 4 or 5 weeks ago, really kind of digging in. But don't spend too much time trying to figure out 2012 standard. Because I think they'll probably, and John, you can agree or disagree with me in chat, but I think R2 will bring enough changes to virtualization that there's going to be some new things available to you there. Again, we'll save that for another show. Yeah. Mike, as we come back to Zen Server, just for folks that are maybe listening to the audio and don't have access to the links, some of the free features that you get on some of the features you get on the free version. So Zen Server Hypervisor, conversion tools, management integration with Microsoft Center VMM, Resilient Distributed Management Architecture, VM Disk Snapshots and Reverts, Zen Server Management Console, and the Zen Motion Live Migration. But as you mentioned, then all these things drop off, and I'll name a few. Automated VM Protection and Recovery, Live Migration with Live Migration with Storage Zen Motion, Distributed Virtual Switching, high availability, memory optimizations. I assume that's what they're talking about there, Mike, is the memory optimizations that you're talking about. Performance alerting and reporting, and then a whole bunch of other things. So that Zen Server has basically a four-tier approach, free, advanced, enterprise, and platinum.
Yeah, I think for the home user, the main thing is missing is that memory overcommit or whatever they call it, memory optimization. Some of those other things probably not are quite as important for the home user. High availability, those, unless you're going to be setting up a bank of Zen servers where you're going to be, you know, moving VMs from one server to the other whenever you need to take a server down. That's not quite as important in the home setting. You know, definitely in enterprise, but not at home. But you could really use that dynamic memory. And I wish they would put that in the free version. If they put that in the free version, I'd be back to Zen Server. I'd be off of Hyper-V in a second. One of the things you did mention, and I should say that I am in no way any kind of an expert in Hyper-V, but one of the things I liked about Zen Server is when I go to do a snapshot or a backup of, you can do both a snapshot and a backup. When I would do a backup of one of the VMs, I would do it to a network storage, you know, outside of that outside of Zen Server. So it was located somewhere else, actually on my Unraid server. So if I ever had needed to take down or rebuild the Zen Server, I could just bring them right back. It was very easy to do. And I have I'm screen sharing right now. I don't know if you want to show it.
No, I've got you up on the main screen. You bet.
That is that. What I'm showing there is the management tool. You have a management tool that you're running on your local PC. It is a free download. It comes, you know, you download it with the program, and from here you can, you know, go through. You know, this is just a screenshot, so I can't change anything.
Yeah.
But you can see the VMs I'm running. I think you even see, in this case, I don't know how well you can read it, but I have a copy of pfSense template, copy of Untangled template. Those are templates. So if I want to do another install of pfSense, I just start from that template, and it's good to go.
Yeah, that's a nice little management console.
And then I have another one here where you can see some, you know, the CPU usage, the memory usage, the NIC usage.
It reminded me a little bit of Hyper-V. VMware pretty similar, Jay? In these consoles?
Yes. I'm not so sure about the free version, which lots of people would use. But listen to you talk about the different things for Zen Server. I mean, that's what I've been using with VMware for quite some time. So that's actually exciting. I like to see a price comparison, you know, between what we're paying for VMware and, you know, support.
Yeah, let's see if we can go ahead, Mike.
You can stop.
Yeah, I do.
Ask me out there if I'm still running Zen. I'm not running Zen right now. And I mentioned earlier when I stopped running it was because even it was my fault. I let the license lapse. Even though it's free, you still have to update the license every year. Let the license lapse, and instead of rebuilding the system, I went ahead, which I would have to rebuild it because of the way I did it. I went ahead and just went over to Hyper-V. I have had issues. We're not talking about Hyper-V tonight, though, are we?
Maybe just a smidge, but only from an update standpoint on my side.
Okay. I would just say that I still want to go back and do another Hyper-V Zen server because of some issues with installing non-Windows operating systems on Hyper-V. Installing Linux or, you know, BSB or whatever you call it, I think it's BSB, which is pfSense based, or, you know, Windows based systems were all very easy to do on Zen server.
And you didn't find those easy to do on Hyper-V?
I had trouble installing pfSense on Hyper-V.
Okay. Yeah, I've only installed, in the short time I've been working on, I've only installed Windows-based VMs.
I know Mike Mortis would tell me I'm doing it wrong, but yeah. I will tell you that, yeah, that's very possible I'm doing it wrong in Hyper-V. But I will tell you that it's not that hard in Zen Server.
Average tech guy, Mike. I mean, you fall into the category of who we try to reach here for the show. And if you're having trouble with it, it probably means it's not as intuitive it needs to be. I know on Hyper-V, I try to install the domain roles. So it's probably not the right word, but to get all that up and running because I wanted to get remote desktop usage off the server and onto the PCs, and that has to be installed. And that was a really kind of tricky install for me. And I'm pretty good at this stuff. And again, I know if you do it for a living and you do it as your business, whatever, I know you're probably like, oh, Jim, it's just a couple clicks. Come on, you know, get it figured out. But again, average guy, that's kind of who we talk to, and it's not maybe not as intuitive. I'll say this at the end of the show, but let me just say this now. I've actually have Mike Fauché, Mike Martis this weekend. So Sunday, if you're hanging around, we're going to do a combined home tech BYOB like we did with home networking. Those guys wanted to join me, and the three of us are going to get together, and we're going to talk about this virtualization topic. Martis is dynamite when it comes to Hyper-V. So if you want to save your questions up on Hyper-V until this Sunday, that would be March sorry, March, June 9th. I think that's right. Let me double check that the date here.
It is June 9th.
Sunday, June 9th, around 4 p.m. Pacific. Just watch my Twitter account at Jay Collison. I'll get you in, and we'll be talking about Hyper-V.
The beauty of Zen Server, and even Hyper-V has one, and ASXi, is they're free. And, you know, install them and give them a try and see which one works best for you. If you don't like it, you can format to hard drive and start all over again.
Yeah, and somebody was asking about pricing on Zen Server, so I tried to put the pricing link in there, but it's so long, it didn't really do very well in the store. So Zen Server, anything above the free, if you're at the Advanced Edition, about $1,000 per server. And I should say about, it's their pricing is super simple. It's $1,000, $1,500 for the enterprise. I'm sorry, $2,500 for the enterprise, and $5,000 for the platinum. All the links for those, if you want to see what's in those versions, are out there. Again, if you're at home, you're probably going to want to be thinking about these free versions. Mike, for you, you say you're going to go back to Zen. You would use the free version if you go back to it to try it again.
Yeah. You know, I'm using Hyper-V now, and it runs fine for what I want to do, because I no longer have pfSense and Untangle virtualized. They're running on regular hardware. But if Zen Server were to put the memory optimization back into it, not back, if they would put it into the free version, I would leave Hyper-V in an instant and go back to Zen Server. The one thing about the memory optimization in Zen Server, again, it's not in the free, it's in the, I think, the advanced, is you can live change the dynamic memory, where you, with a Hyper-V VM, you're going to have to stop the VM to change the memory. You can live change it. And if I remember right, it is with Hyper-V, it is dependent upon the OS. So some OSs won't allow you to do this memory optimization where, you know, I had, I think even in like a Windows 7, it's got to be Windows 7 Ultimate. You may not be able to do it with a Windows 7 Professional or whatever. There were some issues I ran into with that, where with Zen Server, it's and it, probably ESXi too, I don't know, it is much less dependent on OS, is something handled by the Zen, the hypervisor.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird words to say in this. Well, while we're thinking about that, Jay, talk a little bit about on ESXi memory allocation and how that, since we're talking about that. How is that handled?
Well, for the most part, when you over-allocate, well, there's several ways. The first one is what they call memory swapping. So say you've got three VMs. They've each got 2 gig apiece, so that's 6. And VM1 doesn't need all of its RAM, but VM2 needs all of its 2. But you've only allocated 5 gig of RAM or whatever, right? So VM2 is going to steal from VM1 to make sure that it has enough RAM. But there's a whole bunch of other ways as well. For VM workstation, you can use disk swapping, which is essentially writing a memory file to a disk and using disk I/O to, help it out or whatever. Yeah. I can't think of the term right off the top of my head.
It's almost like caching, right?
It's caching was the word I was thinking about.
Oh, okay, good. It's caching then.
In ESX, are you going to be talking about ESXi or what are we?
Yeah, a little bit more about yes.
And that is the memory optimization in there dynamic, where you can, or where you can change it while the VM is still running.
Yes and no. that's interesting. I don't remember the version, if it's 5.0 or a 5.1. With Windows 2008 R2, I believe, you can increase the RAM without a reboot or shutting it down. But you cannot take away. Okay. That's called hot memory, and also hot CPU as well. If the OS supports it, although my tests at work have been less than successful in that area. Mm. Tests, not production.
So. We're always talking about non-production stuff.
Right. Especially over a live feed, right? So
yes.
That's good stuff though.
Mike, you mentioned you have your Hyper-V running. What What are you running on that? What hardware are you running it on right now?
It's that same AMD 6-core chip that I was running. It has 16 gig of RAM. I've thought of switching out, because the one thing I would recommend when you go to build a home system is that RAM for the most part is cheap. So don't limit yourself. Get as much as you can there. You know, I think 16 for a virtual server is really the bottom end. I wish I'd have done 32. If you're going to build, if you're going to build a home VM server, I would say really think about the minimum being 32. That's the one thing I run into with mine is I'm running into memory problems. What I use mine for is, for one, I'm not going to install iTunes on my personal computer. It is banned from my computer. So I actually have a Windows 7 VM running that is sole purpose is to have iTunes on it so that I can check the podcast and how it's doing on iTunes. I know that sounds kind of crazy because I don't actually use iTunes. But
you're just an Apple hater.
I have to have iTunes in order to check some things with the podcast, and I'm not going to put iTunes on my computer. So that's one. The other, my son wanted to build a separate computer because when he gets into some games, he want to have two characters in the games. So he wanted to build a second computer, and maybe that's cheating. I don't know. I didn't ask him. But I said, you know, instead of doing that, I'll just create a VM for you, and you can run it off there. And it works great for him. The other thing I've done is, you know, I test software. I might try out, you know, I've got a Windows 8 VM on there. I've got some, you know, different server software on there. I just test things I want to test and try out. But I also, when I go to build a new system, I create a virtual disk off of it, the old system, and I put it on the VM server. So when I built the system I'm on now, I forgot something. I needed to get something. I actually Wirecast, the program we use to broadcast our show. I forgot to disconnect it on my old system. And I'm thinking, now how do I get it disconnected because the system's gone? But it was a VM I created as part of the when I went to switch over, and I had that running on the Hyper-V. I just booted it up, went in there, disabled Wirecast, and I'm good to go.
So walk me through that real quick. So I have a laptop that I've been using. Yeah. I've replaced it with another laptop, but I want to make a copy of that. Now, I don't want to just copy the files. Right. I mean, I could do a backup of it and copy the files. I actually want to be able to get to it live and running. Give me what are the quick steps I walk through to make that a reality?
It's fairly easy. There's a program called Disk2VHD. You load it on the computer while it's running, and you run that thing, and it will create a VHD file, which is like a virtual hard drive file of that system, and then you bring it into Hyper-V, and you can run that system as if it still exists like that. I did that for my wife when I switched her over to Windows 8. I took her Windows 7 system, created it as a virtual system, and for a while I gave her access where she could run, you know, get to her old stuff, get to Windows 8. She had some issues with transferring to Windows 8, and she wanted to use some of the old stuff. This let her have a bridge where she could still get to the old stuff. If she fussed enough about something not working, I would just say, go ahead and use your old one. It's still there.
So you would create a virtual, you know, environment, right? So say, okay, it's going to be Windows 8. I'm going to apply 2 gig of RAM to it. Do you allocate a hard drive to it?
Well, in this case, since you've created a VHD from your old system, that is the hard drive.
Okay, so you just point that to it and then fire it up, and it just comes up in the...
It should.
Okay, yeah.
Doesn't always work as smooth as that. I would not format that hard drive until you've tried it and it worked.
Until you've brought it up in the virtual environment. Yeah. I'll have to give that a try. I've heard you talk about that several times, and I've never done that, so I'll have to give that a try.
Where I have messed up, because maybe this is just my crazy logic. Logic tells me I should shut down the system and do it off of take the hard drive out of that system and do it with the system shut down. You know, put it on another system and do it off of that.
Yeah.
That won't work.
Okay.
I've never had that work. You do it on the system while it's running. And it works.
Maybe it works.
Maybe everybody else already knew that, but I learned the hard way.
That's good to know. I mean, because you're right. You think whenever you're doing a backup, if you want to back up all the files, you actually have to take Windows offline, right? Because it locks certain files down and it won't back them up. And so us old backup guys who talk up backup all the time, that's a little bit of an instinct. We're like, okay, let's pull the hard drive out. Let's make a copy of it. I'm going to make a copy of it in that way. And but what you said, this so this disk to VHD must it must mean the OS needs to be running. It's doing something in there to make to take advantage of that. Okay, that's cool. I need to give that a try as well and get some virtual stuff running in my environment. Oh, somebody came to the door, Jay. anything else, Mike?
No, I that's all I can think of now.
Okay,
if very I think good. Of something we can come back.
Yeah, to. Yeah, we'll come back around here. I brought Jay in. I want to talk. He spends a lot of time with some VMware stuff for his job, and he gets around the country to talk about it as well. But Jay, I wanted to come at this from your home use, and I know you know not production, but you've got stuff at home. So tell us a little bit about and address maybe some, you know, as we talk about some, the VMware stuff seems to be a little pickier when it comes to the hardware.
Sure.
I think that's the number one complaint I hear from people is, oh yeah, I'd love to use VMware, but it won't, it doesn't like whatever, right? It doesn't like my NIC card. It doesn't like, so you can bring that in, but talk a little bit about what you're doing at home, what you got set up.
Sure. Well, what started all this was years ago, I think I've shared this before, at my company, we wanted to try this new thing that's called virtualization. My director said, hey, I want you to install Microsoft Virtual Server. And I said, what's that? What's a virtual server? He said, oh, I don't know. It costs about $100 and, you know, you can get it in and, I don't know, maybe it was even $1,000 in. But regardless of that, he said, you know, get it in and then let's get it working. I said, great. So I tried that. We put some dev VMs on it. And then, like all Microsoft servers, they have to be patched. This particular server got patched during the day, and every dev person went nuts because all the VMs just turned off. So that was a great lesson learned that day, playing around with Microsoft Virtual Server. So he said, you know, let's start looking at this VMware stuff. Have you heard of it? And I had to mess around with a VM workstation. Not really in any kind of big capacity, just, you know, just mess around with XP or Linux or whatever was going on at the time. Come to find out that we wanted to try out this ESX stuff. And so we started off with 2.5 in a lab, and then we moved from there over to 3.0. With a couple of blades, and I got people used to that, and I got used to allocating RAM and CPU and disk, and really just explain to them that, you know, you won't see a difference. Your performance will be the same because ESX doesn't really care. I'm sorry, the VM doesn't really care what the hardware is underneath because of the separation of the two. That being said, you mentioned that ESX is particularly peculiar about the hardware, and Paul talked about last week he's talking about the list from last week,
right?
And I'll think about that here in a second.
Hardware application layer.
No, the list, the acceptance list. Oh. The one that says what you can, in other words, this is what's acceptable and what's not.
That's it. The hardware compatibility list. Thank
there
you.
There you go.
It's been a long day. Anyway.
you're not feeling great, Jay. Let's just say. So keep going. You're doing great.
All right, great. Thanks. Anyway, so we put that on blades and such. And so from a home perspective, I thought, well, how am I going to be able to learn this kind of stuff? And so I installed VMware Workstation. I think it was version 5, and right now the current is 9. So that kind of gives you an idea about 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, maybe even 6 now. Wow. And so what I was learning on that was how to mess around with Windows Active Directory, like 2003 domains and 2008 domains, learning DNS and WINs and DHCP, and really how I can mess up a network without it being at work, because that can, you know, that can definitely end your career as a system engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So this workstation stuff I thought was just fantastic. But as Mike had said earlier, you can run a VMware workstation on a, I mean, the boxes have to be very, very beefy. You know, I think I think the one that I was using several years ago had only 4 gig of RAM, and so you know I could run a bunch of say Linux stuff or maybe some XP VMs, but when you start adding in some servers and you know 512 meg of RAM just really isn't a whole lot, you know, to run a 2003 or especially a 2008 server.
Yeah, but the memory requirements get pretty high pretty fast.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And so with that in mind, it's you know it starts thrashing your disk. And so if you only have one or maybe two disks in your PC, you're going to go through some issues. So I was looking at different things. I kind of want to build my own home lab to get away from VMware workstation. So I actually recently, about 6 or 7 months ago, or sometime last year, when I was studying for my VCP5 certification, I borrowed 2 IBM Lenovo desktops. And I don't know if anyone knows anything about a Lenovo. I just know we just use them at work. The model is a 7483AG2. They're dual core 3 gigahertz, which is fast enough. One I have is 16 gig of RAM, and the other one is 5 gig of RAM. And I actually installed ESXi on a thumb drive on both of them, so that I can actually use the disk that's inside of them if I wanted to.
So the OS is sitting on the flash drive.
That's correct.
And is running off right? USB 2.
Yes.
Right, and then you're using the disks inside the box as the VM drives.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes. However, as you can probably guess, as you start adding 3 or 4 or 10 VMs, you know, that little 160 gig drive that's inside is not big enough. So I took my spare N40L and I turned that into an open filer box.
What does that mean, open filer? I don't
Open filer is it's a piece of software that that you can essentially set up iSCSI on, so that your host can talk to them.
Okay. So it's like a SAN from that sense.
Yes, it's the poor man's SAN.
Okay.
It's not fast.
It's a little slow. So it's a target. So you could set up a separate box to be a target for storage.
Yes.
And point the VM storage over to that as opposed to having the physical drives located.
Right.
Okay, perfect.
Right. And so also, with that in mind, you can mess around with storage vMotion and stuff by having shared storage. So if one of my hosts goes down or whatever, then the other host would restart the VM on itself, and I can just kind of keep working. Although it's, you know, like I said, it's really all just for test and
yeah.
messing around with.
So. You have a really good home situation here. You know, you this open filer box or the SAN that you've built, it's built on an N40L, which we talk a lot about,
yes.
both here and on the Home Server Show community. If you're listening to my show and you've never listened to Home Server Show, and this is interesting, check out homeservershow.com. We talk a lot about this. But those HP N40Ls, nice little boxes set up there. You've got a few drives in that, right? So you're running the 250 gig that drive comes with it as an OS. And is OpenFiler an OS, or are you running that on top of an OS?
No, that's an OS.
Okay. So it's its own OS. You're running that on the 250 gig drive, and then you've got two 1 terabyte drives and 1 2 terabyte drive in there.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Those are all just green drives, just spares that I had, actually out of my old 45 that I had that's long gone. You know, but you know, you got to move up and move on sometimes, right? So
yeah. And does OpenFiler stripe those in any way? Those drives in any way? Any drive extender type technology?
It's not so much as that. Yes, you could set them up in a RAID 0, RAID 1, or RAID 5. I don't, because you know, if I lose it, no big deal really.
Okay.
So. It's actually pretty cool. So with a 2 terabyte LUN, I was testing out VMware's free backup solution, right? So I was backing up my VMs to that 2 terabyte LUN and just, you know, messing around with that and restoring and see how long it takes. And it takes a long time on those little green drives. But that's okay, too.
Yeah, they're not the fastest things in the world, that's for sure. No.
But I still use VMware Workstation to even test out other things. My current PC, gosh, you know, I've had this for quite a long time. This is a quad core Q8400. You know, it's just one of those off the shelf HP boxes that you buy from Costco. You know, I was really into, you know, like the fastest hard drive and the fastest motherboard and the most RAM that you can buy for, say, $600 and, you know, a $300 video card and all that kind of stuff. And then I came across this little website called, you know, homeservice show.com. And so I kind of got away from all that PC building and decided, let's try server stuff because, you know, it's fun. So...
Yeah, and not too terribly difficult anymore, I think. I think, and Mike, you can chime in on this. Yeah. I think the average guy factor in servers now, it's come to the average guy. I think if you're an average tech guy and you have a little bit of savvy with PCs, you can make that jump to servers now. A lot of the stuff's automated. I've been messing around with server, you know, 2012, Windows Server 2012, and it just does a lot of stuff for you. I mean, you install, like you install Windows 8, you fire it up, you install roles for various functions that you want. If you want the Hyper-V role, you just pick it, walk through a wizard, it installs the roles for you. I did, when I was going through this exercise, I did download ESXi 5, would that be right, 5.1?
Oh yes,
and actually fired. That was the first VM VM software that I tried when I got this box for it, and it set up and it worked for me. Now I didn't dig too far into it. I came back around to Hyper-V pretty quick once I got some stuff going, and I have not yet come back to VMware. I might give that a shot, but I think in the world of the average guy, it's fairly easy to do, and so. I think your story, I think we're all experiencing that out in the community, in our communities between the show and the home server show.
Yeah, I forgot to mention one of
my
use cases and why I have a V running. So, you know, I mentioned I don't want iTunes on my computer, but there's also times whenever I'm wanting to, maybe I'm looking for a certain program to do some kind of conversion of a video file or something like that. You're looking for a program, you don't know which one you want, and I download, you know, program after program that is either a trial version or a free version, and I wanted to try them out, and I'm not sure which one I'm going to want. Like, for instance, when I was looking for document management software, I went with File Center eventually, but I tried like six different ones. I don't want to install and uninstall all those different programs on my main system because, to me, it feels like you degrade the OS as you install and uninstall, you know, program after program after program. So I just have a VM, which is my test VM. I don't know which program I want to use. I install it over there. I play with it. If it does something unfortunate where it messes the OS up or whatever, you know, happens, if I feel like it's, and it wasn't too safe of a program, I probably should have done that. I've done it all inside of this VM that I'm not really caring about. You know, I've got a snapshot from the beginning, and if I need to if I screw it up, I can just go back to the snapshot, and none of it has touched my system.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of folks go to VMs, right? It allows, right? Jay, do you have any, besides your learning, testing, those kinds of things, do you have any, let's just call it home production stuff? Have you virtualized anything at home that you depend on, that you use in your environment?
Well, actually, kind of like what Mike was talking about, for video and audio encoding and, you know, mixing and stuff, I actually did the same thing. I created an XP VM. This was, I don't know, 3, 4, or 5 years ago or whatever, and started messing around with, you know, like Handbrake and some other things, just rip my own DVDs. So kind of like what he's talking about, you know, if my main PC goes down for any reason, well, I still have that VM, right? So I don't have to worry about trying to find the disk or the ISOs or downloading another bugged program or something like that. I just, you know, I just take care of it. So that's what I enjoy with that one. I heard that some people download torrents when. If you've ever heard of a torrent before, I'm not sure.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, whatever.
I just read on a blog somewhere. But anyway, I heard...
John Zadler.
to John. I heard that you know, that's a great way to separate the network traffic, you know, because once you're done with the torrent, you know, you just cut off your VM and it's, you know, it's done, you know. It doesn't
but that's
keep
not
going.
Playing but that's not playing very nice in the, you know, in the torrent world. I mean, the idea behind a torrent is everybody lives on the node so that downloads go faster. Let's just say it's legitimate torrent material, right? Which
yes.
would be, you know, maybe
Absolutely.
Some of those kinds of things, right?
So there are plenty.
For the sake of this discussion, there's plenty of legitimate stuff out there that can live on a torrent, and so that's not really playing. I get your point, right? If you want to play in the pool but you don't want to do any pool maintenance, you can shut off your VM and that is that. Jay, let me ask you first, Mike, how many VMs, so on Hyper-V right now that you have running, how many VM instances do you have?
Yeah, I was just looking at that. So I only had, at this instance, because I had to just reboot it from when we came back from vacation, I had it turned off. So I only have two running actually right now, but in total, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, about 15. And normally I might only be running 4 or 5 at a time.
Okay.
Looking at it, I have two versions ago. I have the previous version of my computer out there as a virtual system and the version before that. I have both of my son's previous versions of computers sitting out there, and I have one of my wife's. Actually, no, I have two. I have her Windows 7 and prior to that her Windows XP still sitting out there. So you might be asking, wow, that's a lot of hard drive space. In this case, I got a lot of hard drive space, so it's not an issue. If it ran into problem, I would delete it.
And you're not running them all the time, right?
No. The reality is my wife's Windows XP, there's no reason to keep that. I should delete that. That one has never run. My Windows 7 one, I've... couple of things. I messed up and didn't have my tax return from last year. It was on the old system. I thought it was, everything should be on my file server, and for whatever reason that wasn't. And I could not believe it when I went to do my taxes this year, but I still had that old system sitting there, and I just booted it up, found the file. Oh, and no, here's what it was. It was I needed to get into the actual tax software.
Yeah.
And I didn't have this on this computer. It was on that one. So I just booted that one up. Got into that tax software because, for whatever reason, I didn't print it, my tax return. And I booted up and printed the pages I needed to. But I didn't have to reinstall TurboTax 2011,
right,
which is what I would have had to do. I just rebooted up my old system, started up TurboTax 2011, and got the data I needed off of that.
There, Tim's picking on you out there, Mike. You better go defend yourself. Jay, how many...
So hold on a second. So he's picking on me. What, I was able to get it, wasn't I?
That's good.
Nicely done.
If I wasn't able to get my own tax return, you could pick on me, but I got it.
It's just funny because as soon as you started talking about, somebody had put, let's see, who was that? I think that was John had said in there something about not to mention the IRS. They were talking about NSA listening, and you, as soon as they put that in, you started talking about the IRS. I thought, oh, wow, that was
they're already hacking all our phones.
Oh,
so.
I know. Yeah, that's for sure. Jay, how many VMs are you running just in your non-production environment?
Oh, well, just last week I was testing Vue, right, which is being able to run a virtual desktop, like through a client or whatever, and so that's four right there. So that's a domain controller, a virtual center, the Kinect server, and security server as well. And you know, so that's what, four or five, you know, give or take.
Okay.
But part of the reason why I like Workstation is that I can actually nest ESX host in there. So when I'm actually breaking stuff, you know, I can just throw an ESX host on there and, you know.
But is Workstation like using, and I don't know the terminology, so I apologize for that, but is Workstation like using VirtualBox in the sense that if I shut my PC off, the VM dies, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
It has some drawback. Great for testing, right?
Great for testing.
You don't necessarily want to build an environment that supports anything for the most part on top of Workstation, right?
I wouldn't. You know, I mean, if your power supply dies, then you're done, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
unless
you're like Christian with the dual power supplies for redundancy, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't have that. But.
Mike, does Zen Server offer any desktop virtualization tools, or is it all server?
It does. I don't think that's what the free version, but it does do that. And, you know, we've debated at work using Zen Server. We're using Hyper-V right now just because, you know, Hyper-V, we're more of a Windows shop at work. So Hyper-V just fits right in there, but we've debated that. I want to mention one more thing that I just thought of is GPU pass-through. I don't think that's available in the free version of Zen Server. And if you're building something that you need, you know, GPU pass-through, that's something to keep in mind with any of these, with any of these VMs. So, like in the case of my Hyper-V, I have an okay GPU in there. But it can only be allocated to two VMs because it has two outputs. It can only be allocated to two VMs. So I've allocated to my VM and my son's game VM. But it's not, in my case, and what I have seen, is not exactly the same as having a true video card on a true system. It's not quite as good as that.
Okay.
In most cases, though, if you're not playing like a game or need video, heavy video processing, it's going to be fine.
It's standard video will be fine. Right. Jay, on the VMware side, passing, you know, this is always kind of the concern, is can I pass my peripherals through to, you know, from the host to the guest and right. and make that work? Is that pretty well supported?
For workstation?
No, let's just talk about workstation a second.
Workstation does pass through USB pretty well. I've used a scanner once. Mice and keyboard, obviously. Joysticks work, you know. Signature pads work. You know, those type of things.
Okay. Server?
Sometimes. I don't believe... within ESX or at least ESX 5, but Vue works fine, you know. But I mean, we're not talking about
Right. Okay. I hear that a lot in the when we talk about virtualization. I hear a lot about hardware pass through.
And I believe Zen Server does allow for USB pass through, where Hyper-V is much more difficult with that.
Yeah.
But Zen Server does allow for a USB pass through.
That's kind of the next level, you know. We probably won't dig too deep into that, but that's probably the next level. Maybe Martis will talk about that some on Sunday. The idea of passing through the hardware?
Yeah, I think you know, as you even a home user, as you start digging into this, you start going, "What else can I virtualize? I want to virtualize everything." You just get kind of that virtualization fever. I know you're going to be getting it soon too, Jim, as you start to dig into it.
Yeah.
And you go, can I make every one of the? Can I make my wife's and my kids and all their their computer just be, you know, not a dummy screen, but it's just basically a screen.
Thin client, basically.
A thin client with everything going on back there. And that pass-through, that's where the average guy needs to think about it. You know, if your wife or your kids or you are working with a thin client and you can't just plug in your, let's say I have a memory card reader for my camera, I can't just plug that in and use it because I'm doing some kind of a thin client thing, that would be an issue.
Right.
You would need to work those things out.
Yeah, it's definitely different than bare metal for bare metal support when you're talking about, you know, especially because they won't do the tweaks and the workarounds and, you know, those kinds of things. They just want it to freaking work.
Yeah.
And I have learned, or at least I'm content to give my family members their own piece of hardware. You say virtualization fever. I don't think I'm ever going to get to the point where I'm going to try and push out a thin client or a virtualized workstation to them. Just not worth it for. Well, the kids have spent thousands of dollars on their PCs to build these gaming rigs.
Yeah, if you're a gamer,
that yeah, would. Yeah. There's no way. Now, what I would like to virtualize is in the environment that I have here that we're using for the podcast. You know, you and I both do it the same way. We have a studio PC. That's the PC that I have the camera on here and that's serving the sound and all that thing. And then we have a separate broadcast server, and actually if you're looking in the YouTube or in the live stream, you'll see a little picture of me to the right of me. I think that's in both, or it's to the left on the one that's going out. That's the broadcast server, and its purpose is to unify the sound and the audio. Mike, in all your testing, I know that hasn't gone particularly well in virtualizing that broadcast server.
Yeah, and I think this is where a little bit of the GPU pass through comes in. So what I had set up a VM on Hyper-V to do another Hangout. So, like, we're in a Google Plus Hangout right now, and I was going to have another creating that the Hangoutosaurus. Yeah, the Hangoutosaurus.
Yes, there you go.
Creating a Hangoutosaurus.
You name that thing, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting Hyper-V and Hangoutosaurus mixed up. Doing a Hangoutosaurus, I was thinking, all right, I'll virtualize I'll have a VM. It'll join the Hangout, and it'll be another member of the Hangoutosaurus. It had issues with the video. The video was not clean, and that's because, from what I understand, that is because of the GPU pass through in that system. I did not have GPU pass through, and the virtualized GPU was not strong enough.
Yeah.
If somebody has made that work successfully, please send me a note. I'd like to talk to you.
When we do these broadcasts, especially when you add live stream Procaster into the mix, you have a very video intense screen scraping application that's pulling that video off, and we try to transmit it at fairly high, very high resolutions so that you get a really good picture. Right. Ironically, you get the best picture through the YouTube channel, which makes sense because we're broadcasting natively to YouTube through Google Hangouts, and so it makes sense. You know, Google is getting all of the content from all of our streams on their servers. They're not recording it off my desktop. They're recording it at the server level, you know, back wherever. We actually have a major data center just across the river in Iowa. I've seen that. Now it'll be interesting to see. I will try some things when I get this up and running. I'm kind of going through the discovery process. At first I started with, you know, it's a dual CPU Xeon box. It's a workstation 690. It's a Dell workstation, Precision workstation 690. So I have two CPUs in there, each of them having two cores and Xeon. So they're server quality and they're fast. They're 5 years old and they're still super fast.
Yeah.
Which is great. And then I've stacked it up with 32 gig of RAM in there, which takes a ton of power, by the way, because you have those stacked memory towers to get all that memory in there. And the thing runs at about 350 watts now without drives. So it's a little bit of a power. You know, it consumes a little bit of power in the process. And the guys, you know, thanks to John Stutzman, Chris Kenny, and especially Kevin Schoonover. Kevin actually sent me, they were decommissioning some of these drives. These are 150 gig. They're kind of designed, they're server quality, they spin super fast. I think these are 10,000 RPM drives. I'd have to ask Kevin. But great drives. They were decommissioning them at his workplace, getting ready to recycle them. And so he deleted them and sent them over to me and put them in a RAID 0, just two of them in a RAID 0. Nice. And if you actually go out to thehomeservershow.com in the forums, I'm going to do a post at theaverageguy.tv, but I posted all the benchmarks out there. And, you know, I had been running... never do this. I don't have one of those drives on my desk. I had been running it off of a 320 gig laptop drive, right? That was what I had available at the moment. Drive? That was the OS drive. Those are horrible.
Yeah.
You know, the specs on that are just terrible. I didn't realize how bad they really were, right? And from a performance standpoint, you know, you think, oh, it's just a little drive. How bad can it be? They're bad. Trust me, they are bad. If you have a laptop and you have a spinner in it, rip that thing out, put an SSD in it today, because you're losing massive amounts of performance. So then I raided I took two laptop drives and put them in a RAID 0 and put them together. Well, it doubled the speed, but when you double crap, you still get crap.
Yeah.
Right? And so it wasn't that much faster. Well, when I put these drives in, just two on RAID 0, and it was like 20 times the speed on it. And so... Mm-hmm. I've been working through and installing, you know, I have two more to put in there. Thanks, Kevin. I've got two more here to go in. I'm waiting for the SATA cables to come from Monoprice. And I'm going to put four RAID 0 and then do some testing and see what that looks like for the OS.
Wait, you're going to do a RAID 0 with four drives?
Uh-huh, four drives.
That thing's going to be screaming.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, and then I have a Rocket RAID card. So that'll be the first set of testing that I'm going to do. Because it's fun. I got this hardware. I don't necessarily have to do anything with it right away. Yeah, so I've been kind of reacquainting myself with some of these hard drive, you know, ATTO testing and stuff like that, which has been great.
Tim Black says he loves Death Raid, which is RAID 0. I mean, you lose one drive, you lost everything.
You're done, right? I'm going to back it up some other way. But Then I have a rocket rate, I think a 2680 or 80 or a 2860. I always get those mixed up. But Fauché sent me a while back. And then I'm going to get some data drives, and we'll raid zero those for the VM drives. And it should be a pretty screaming box at that point. I shouldn't have a lot of bottlenecks. It'll consume more power than, you know, the oven does when it's turned on. so that's kind of my VM. And right now I'm kind of focusing on Hyper-V just because, you know, we tend to lean towards the Microsoft community a little bit. And of course, with R2 coming out, that's kind of the direction I'm going. So I was going to talk about the end of the show, but I'll just bring that in right here. That's where I'm heading. Jay, anything else in your list you wanted to cover?
I don't think so.
Think you got it all?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Mike, anything else on your side? Any last questions from the chat room, too? I'm going to kind of start going into the post-show descent, which now takes about 10 or 15 minutes to get all. You know, we've really worked hard to move all the content up to get what you came to the show for up front, so we get right to business. I try within a minute and 30 or 2 minutes to get right to the content for you. But then that means I've got to put all the miscellaneous housekeeping at the end of the show, so I've been saving that for that. So, Mike, anything else?
No, I think we covered most of it. People often forget about Zen Server, but, you know, give it a look. There's a lot of data out there. You can look at some YouTube videos and get the free version, download it, and give it a try. It's, you know, if you're going to go Hyper-V, maybe before you do that, give Zen Server a try, and then, you know, if you don't like it, delete it and go ahead and install your Hyper-V you're going to do. And at least after you've tried it, you've looked at that. It should install on anything that you're going to be able to install Hyper-V on.
Okay. Yeah, well, really, any of them will run, right? Zen, Hyper-V, or ESXi, with maybe that the reverse order of difficulty. Do you guys agree with me? If ESXi will probably be the most difficult, Hyper-V would be next, and Zen Server after that, from a usability standpoint.
What do you mean, installation?
No, I mean actually using it, using the three in everyday use.
I have not used. There is a version of Hyper-V that is not, it's more like a bare metal thing, like Zen Server. But I'm using the one that's installed in the OS comes with 2008.02, and from that standpoint, it's fairly easy to use.
Yeah.
So I for me, I think Zen Server, Hyper-V are about as easy to use. There's some things about Zen Server that I found very easy.
Okay.
But Hyper-V is not that difficult.
Okay. Jay, any weigh in on that? If I ranked those in order of difficulty, agree, disagree?
I would totally agree. I'm actually looking forward to tearing down all this ESX stuff and installing Zen Server. So.
Oh, awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go ahead and get the $1,000 version so you can try the memory thing out for me.
Yeah, I probably won't, but thanks. I'll try. Yeah. I'll check with my CPA.
With the boss to see how much money is left. Well, good discussion, guys. I'll remind folks that listening, both on the recorded version, we're getting together with BYOB this weekend, and if you're listening to this after June 14th of 2013, that's already happened. You can head back. This show is number 120, so if you want to get all the show notes, we'll have some stuff out there. I'll go back and listen and get all the show notes put in. TheAverageGuy.tv/HT, as in Home Tech, 120. And then next Sunday's show with BYOB, a joint show, Mike Morris, Mike Fauché, will talk about their VM setups. And that'll be a really detailed hardware show, too. Mike Morris, both of those guys do a great job on the podcast. We'll broadcast that live right here at TheAverageGuy.tv as well. So if you want to head over on Sunday to catch us, again, 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 Central, 7 Eastern is at least, I think, the scheduled time right now. Watch my Twitter. I didn't confirm it with those guys. So we're coming up on that. You may not want to miss it. I think it will be pretty good. Again, big thanks to Kevin Schoonover for fishing some drives out of the recycle bin and sending those over to me. They have been fantastic, and appreciate what he has done. Oh, I did get a letter from a listener. In fact, he is out there right now. He's Crom C. All. Out there in chat right now. But George, thanks for sending me a note. He said I can read this. So he says, I've been meaning to write for a while but kept putting it off because I had so many things I wanted to touch on. Finally, I decided to just put it on my calendar as a list of things to do so I could get it done. First off, I've been listening to the Home Server Show since show -1. I thought this was pretty cool. Show -1. Dave did a podcast with Ian Dixon where they talked about starting the Home Server Show before the Home Server Show even started. And if you're new to the show, you know, Ian Dixon got Dave podcasting. Dave got me podcasting. So I guess that makes Ian Dixon my grandfather, if we talk about in the area of podcasting. But so he's been doing it since -1. And so he says he's been around the block a few times with us, a longtime listener. And so, George, thanks for listening through all those shows. Good heavens, we're up to show 225, I think, on the Home Server Show, and we've done 120 of these things. So appreciate you listening. He says, I've been listening to the Home Tech Podcast now steadily for the last 6 months. It's been great. I really like the series you've been doing lately. And boy, the series has gotten a lot. These series, we did one on home networking. We did one on laptops. This one on virtualization. This has kind of changed the game at Home Tech. I've gotten tons of positive feedback from you guys that you'll like this series. So I appreciate you sending that feedback in. It's kind of nice to know that we're scratching the itch, so to speak, for you guys. So I appreciate you saying that. He says, I think it's a great idea from the standpoint that you can't cover everything in just one show. We were trying to do the variety show where everybody brought their own stuff, and then it was kind of a hodgepodge, and it worked. We had some really good shows doing that, but since we've kind of focused on one topic, it's been really cool. And so you're right. Plus, hearing different people's take on the subject is really helpful. So please keep that up, and I might even have a topic for you. And he did, in the rest of the email, talk about a topic based off a discussion we had around the Chromebook. He had mentioned tech education, right? There's a whole lot of tech involved in education these days. We scratched the surface with the Chromebook, but there's a lot more going on out there. Christian scratched the surface when we talked about some of the software applications being used in education today. So we'll kick that around. And so if you're a host, a regular host here, or you're even a guest and you've got some experience around technology in education, love to hear from you. Maybe we'll get you on the show and feature something. If you're a specialist somewhere or you do something with tech education, we'd like to hear from you. Send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and we can try to get you on the show. Reminder about next week. One thing I saw, guys, maybe you could, this will be a little home tech throwback. Today I was updating the PC just before the live show, and you know, I got that note, hey, you need to install updates on Windows. I am running Windows 7 boxes here for the studio PC. And I got a Microsoft Security Essentials pre-release update.
And it's so bad they realize they got to send out pre-releases.
Pre-release to a product that's already been out there? I didn't understand. Maybe someone can chime in. It's like,
that's because the version that's out there now is like pre-beta.
Yeah, so
it doesn't actually stop anything.
Oh, well, anybody know? Jay, have you heard anything about this pre-release? I know we've been bashing Security Essentials for the last 6 months or so just because it's not been the greatest. Do you guys have any word? Is Microsoft doing anything new?
I haven't heard. I didn't get that on my 2011 server. I'm running Security Essentials there, and I got an update for it that wouldn't install, so I just...
Okay. I have heard it's claimed victory as being better than Clam AV.
yeah, it's not. It's gotten hammered quite a bit, and you know, there's been some folks who didn't hear the problems that it's had. It has gotten rated very poorly in the last couple go rounds of antivirus. You know, the guys that check that stuff. I don't know. Maybe Microsoft's been working too hard on Windows 8. Speaking of Windows 8. Windows 8.1 comes out here June 26th, and it's pre-release. Speaking of a pre-release, Windows 8.1, June 26th, that becomes available for public preview. We're going to try and be all over that. I probably I doubt we'll do a podcast on the day it comes out, but I do have a podcast scheduled for Thursday. Let me look at the calendar. Not the 26th, but Thursday the 27th, we will do a podcast around Windows 8. So we will hit it just the day after. And we'll take a look at that. If you want to be involved in that podcast, hosts, if you're out there, you've already gotten the invite, then hosts, I mean the guys who are regularly on the podcast who are in the inner circle, so to speak. But if you've got something you really want to say and you want to jump in there, we're going to do the podcast that night. Thursday, June 27th, send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. That is what's coming up. Don't forget, we also got John Zadler on June 20th. No Home Server Show on the 19th. Dave is off on vacation, and then so we're going to move the Home Server Show to Thursday night, June 20th, and John Zadler will be out there to talk Home Server stuff. It's all good, John. We save up John's Home Server material for a month, and then he just kind of gets it all out in one shot. And so it's always good to have John Zadler on the podcast. Mike and I are doing a little bit of a contest. We're trying to see who can get the most subscribers between JPEG to RAW and Home Tech. And I told him, hell no, Home Tech will kick JPEG's So
subscribers on YouTube.
On YouTube. What did I say?
You just said subscribers.
Oh, subscribers on YouTube. So Mike and I are having a little contest. If you're a Home Tech listener, you got to help me beat this guy. I mean, I know he's a nice guy, but you got to help me. Right now he's ahead. I think like three. What's your current?
I am eight ahead. And eight ahead. Keep in mind that you were 20 plus when we started the race.
I know. You've certainly bolted the gap. Ahead.
So you guys got to help Jim out so he can catch back up. It's a fun race. I look at it as if you get ahead, it's just encouragement for me to move forward, and you know, the same for you as hopefully we both move up. Our goal is to reach 1,000, because at 1,000 YouTube lets us live stream directly to them. A little bit different than the on-air thing we're talking about that we're doing here. It allows us to stream straight to them. So our goal is to get to 1,000 as fast as possible.
Yeah, so help us, and we need to catch Dave on the home server show. So,
yeah, don't tell him we're racing, because he's way ahead of us.
I know.
And we don't want him to know we're racing until we pass him up.
He doesn't listen to the show, so don't tell him, okay? So head out to youtube.com/theaverageguyTV on YouTube, and all the links are on the site if you want to head out to theaverageguy.tv as well. And just subscribe. You know, it really doesn't cost you anything, and you don't get that much spam when we publish new things. You can set all the, if you want to hear from us or not, when we publish new videos. I would turn mine off, because I actually, for every podcast I do, I publish two videos. There's one raw and one produced. Okay. And you just don't want to get an email every time that happens. So subscribe, turn off the notifications, and just so I can beat Mike Howard to 1,000. It would be great if you would head out there and get that done. I would love, that'd be awesome to just
I beat you to 300, so the next target is the first to 500.
All right, yeah.
So I'm just throwing those things out there. Haven't talked this over, but the next target is 500, and you know, let's see who can get there first. I'm all for you pulling back ahead of me, because then I can use that as incentive for us
The JPEG Dural
listeners. We just keep leapfrogging each other.
I like it. Speaking of money, we're giving away $100. Who couldn't use $100 from Amazon? Speaking of that, if you haven't joined us on the Facebook page, and many of you had, we're almost to 200 at this point. We got a little ways to go. Wouldn't take many of you to join us on the Facebook page. Again, it's one of those things you can turn off the notifications if you're not a big Facebook user. But some of the best, most engaging conversations I've had around technology are happening right now on our Facebook page. So head out to facebook.com/group/theaverageguy and get out there. Some great conversation, especially with Windows 8.1 or 8.1 coming out. There's going to be some, just today, a bunch of the guys went out there and posted some materials. I watched one of the videos. There was kind of a Microsoft put a nice video together about the highlights of the new Windows 8.1. And so there's a lot of great resources and materials. You don't have to join in the conversation, but if you want to, you can. It would be great to have you out there. When we hit 250 members out on the Facebook group, we will give away $100 to everybody in the group. You're all going to get $100.
Nice. You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. No, that's not going to happen. One person's going to win $100 from Amazon. And while you're at it, go out to the Facebook page and like that as well. And then I do want to remind you, last reminder on events that are coming up. Dave McCabe and I are putting together a dynamite meetup out in Indianapolis, Indiana, September 21st. A lot of you guys in the chat have already committed to it. And Mike Howard, you're coming.
I committed last night, which means Rich O'Neill has to commit. I think we did it live on one of his shows. Where if he committed, I would commit. Well, I can't wait for him anymore. I went ahead and committed. So Rich has to commit. And if you wait to after in the post show, I'm going to show you something I'm going to bring for Rich. Awesome. I showed you the laptop before, because you know Rich is looking for a laptop. I showed you the laptop before I'm bringing for him. I have another one, so he can choose between the two. And I'll show you that in the post show.
Awesome. If you go out to hss2013.eventbrite.com, I'll have that in the show notes as well. That is the registration for it. You know, we have enough room for 90 people. We are actually going to have to set a limit. We're already above 30 at this point, and we still got a couple months out. So if you think you can make it, and Jay, they have these things called airplanes, and you buy a ticket. You buy a ticket, and then you land in another city, And someone would be there at the airport to pick you up, I bet. And then
about that. I actually did look how far it was going to take me to drive, or how long it would take me to drive. It's like a day. So
where are you coming from?
Phoenix.
Okay, yeah.
Now, Flyboco, he is out in Denver. You know, if you make it to Omaha, you could come. Well, no, you really, because I'm leaving a day before, so you can't. That Denver to Indianapolis, that's a long. It's 10 hours for me. It'd be 18 hours from Denver.
Wow,
it's a long drive. But if you're anywhere within a 10-mile or 10-hour radius, you definitely want to consider being at this. Mike's going to make an 8-hour trip. I'm going to make a 10-hour. You're going to want to be there. If you need to be picked up at the airport, let us know. But get signed up for the meetup. It's going to be dynamite. We're going to have some Surface products there. We're going to have some server stuff there. HP's going to kick in some stuff. I'll have Drobo stuff there. We'll have Synology stuff there. We're going to have QNAP stuff there. I mean, you're going to want to be there. We had a great time last year and invaded Fry's, and we went to Steak and Shake. And there's a new Microsoft store there now in Indianapolis that we're going to invade brand new. It's just going to open in June. And so we'll get to go in there and kind of just take the place over. So you and Mike's bringing waffles.
Is there a Waffle House near this place?
I don't know. Why don't you look it up?
We might be able to work something out.
Instead of Steak and Shake being the official sponsor of the evening event on, because that's just where we went last year with Steak and Shake. They didn't really sponsor anything. Maybe Waffle House should be. We'll have to look that up and get some. Do they have shakes at Waffle House?
Not officially, no.
Shoot. Those are always good at the end of a long meetup. So that's coming up. Check it out. We'd love to have you out there at the meetup. And many of you are going to attend, and I hope you will be able to make it. I know that they don't have at Waffle House is they don't have pancakes.
We do not have pancakes.
I don't know why I find that so funny.
It's Waffle House.
Waffle, right. And waffles.
One of the things I want to remind you, if you're new to podcasting, maybe you just caught us for the first time or you're listening to this, great way to consume the podcast in audio form is on Stitcher. Stitcher is really making a run, guys, at being on everything. They're trying to get in all the cars. They're on Android. They're on iPhone. Can I get a Windows Phone confirmation? I should look that up. I'm sure they have an app for Windows Phone, and if they don't, you can just go to Stitcher.com. Sign up for a free account, and then you can aggregate this podcast as well as so you can aggregate Home Tech. You could even aggregate Financial Tech or Rich's Random Podcast, any of the podcasts on this network on Stitcher, and then they're available for you via streaming when you want to listen to them. So it's a great way to know you won't miss a show. You'll know when a new show has come out, and you'll get some notice and some warning that we've got some new material. You can go out and listen to it. A great way to listen to the podcast. Stitcher.com, just search for Home Tech. We say it's education for your ears. We already talked about signing up on YouTube, so youtube.com/TheAverageGuy. It is The Average Guy TV. You can also catch us live each and every week, 8 p.m. Central, over at theaverageguy.tv/live. Don't forget, we've got groups on Facebook. I mentioned that, facebook.com/group/TheAverageGuyTV. We're on Google Plus, although that group is not very active, so I'll leave Google Plus alone at this point, but don't forget The Average Guy. When you're buying from Amazon, you can head out to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. We make a few cents in commission when you're doing that. We turn that money right back around into giveaway money to do like the $100 Amazon giveaway that we're doing, and a lot of you have done that. Last 2 months have been really, really supportive, so I appreciate you doing that through Amazon. You can also go to amazon.theaverageguy.tv. That one also works. All right, guys, I think we got through it. We're going to head into the post show. Just remember, you can't hear the post show on the recording. I cut that off. You have to be here. And some of the best stuff is in the post show. So I cut that off. We don't make it available anymore. You have to come out live. Join us Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern. That's, I think, noon in Eastern Australia, something like that. It seems like Rennie is always able to join us. And Andrew as well when he is not working with the kids. Join us live, theaverageguy.tv/live, and you follow us on all the places that you normally follow people. Mike, thanks for coming out tonight. Thanks for pinch hitting on short notice. I know I just asked you on Tuesday.
Thanks for having me.
But it was great to talk about Zen Server. Jay, I'm glad you made it through without an incident.
Yeah, thanks.
I hope you feel better. We haven't seen you in a while, so welcome back. And appreciate you jumping in and doing this. We'll do it all again. We will do it all again next Thursday. Remember, 4th of July here in the United States is coming up, and we will not be broadcasting on Thursday, July 4th. But we'll do it all again next week, 8 p.m., 9 Eastern. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.